Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio. 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You could download that app anywhere you get your favorite apps, your Google Play Store, your Apple App Store. Look for the Odyssey app with the big orange A. Download it. Search for WILK News Radio. Favorite it, and that's it. You're done. Listen to us anywhere, anytime, any place. Uninterrupted, pure digital bliss. Works great with your CarPlay. And again, if you're in and out of the area, listen anywhere you want. You can stop and pause. If you get out to go to the store, get gas or something like that, come back in, it picks up right where you left off. Great little ditty there. It's 3:08 here, 79 degrees on this Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025. There is a little haze out there, and it's unsure. Different parts of America are getting hit with different types of haze over the past couple of days, but it is moving closer to our area, so I don't know if it's part of it or not. But you have the Canadian wildfires again. Now, these Canadian wildfires are further west in Canada than the ones that affected us last year that put this orange haze and we could smell the fire. Our air quality was down. But there's mid to western Canada is dealing with their own outburst of wildfires again. 90% of Manitoba, Saskatchewan wildfires are human caused, says government investigators in Canada. Preliminary data for this year indicates that most wildfires in Manitoba and Saskatchewan have been human caused, though their impact on total area burned is yet unknown. Well, that smog and that haze from the wildfires is all the way down into the central U.S., kind of like it was last year, but it hasn't come that far east, although with today's haze, maybe it has. You know, it will come our way because that's the way the jet stream flows from west to east, and so it's coming our way. You also have the Sahara Desert sandstorms that have come across the Atlantic, are affecting Florida and the Gulf Coast, and also moving up the coast. So you have a mix of you know, poor quality air and haze and smoke that has nothing to do with you know, us here and what we do as far as our atmosphere and our green energy or whatever we do here. It's wildfires from Canada and sandstorms from Africa that's affecting the U.S. mostly at this time. So if you're affected, you might want to check out the air quality, make sure you're taking whatever allergens you take if you're sensitive to such smog, smoke, or anything like that. I know my wife has a hard time with seasonal allergies. This stuff does not help. You know, anytime I cut the grass, if she's outside, she's got to wear an N95 mask until I'm done just to stop any flare-ups. But other than that, it's all good. So how's you doing today? 79 degrees now, close to 80. I'm getting two temperatures. One, the computer says 80. The wall says 79. But tomorrow's supposed to be pushing 90. A little more humid, hot. Summer's here, I guess. I'm even wearing a Hawaiian shirt today, and Jake said I look good, so I guess I must the Hawaiian shirt is on point. So lots of things going on. We're going to discuss a lot of things. Start off with this Lackawanna County hopes to enlist all 40 of its municipalities to back an application for a state grant to study the possibility of creating a county-wide stormwater management plan. Yeah, you heard me. A stormwater management plan, and they're going to apply for a state grant to study the possibility of creating one. Again, tax dollars, even if it's a state grant. It's interesting when the county or any entity says, oh, it's a federal grant, or it's ARPA funds, or it's a state grant. It's our tax money. No matter where it comes from, it's our tax money. If it's federal tax money, if it's state tax money, if it's county or municipal tax money, it's all ours. That's where they get their money from. So don't be fooled when they say, well, you know, it's coming from the state or the state's covering this. I love when they have departments. One of the big things when Lackawanna County had the debacle with their health department, well, the state is covering 80% or reimbursing 80% of it. Okay, so you mean our tax dollars are supplementing our tax dollars? Because that's exactly what's happening. And the stormwater management plan. Okay, so if this study says, well, you have a stormwater management plan, you need a stormwater board or a department. And the department needs a manager. The manager needs assistant. You need people out there, investigators, to make sure we're doing the right thing as far as stormwater goes, and that stormwater management department needs a board, and these are going to be appointed, you know, it's Lackawanna County. Do I need to go further? So far, only 9 municipalities out of the 40. Vandling, Carbondale, Mayfield, German, Elmhurst Township, Oliphant, Dixon City, South Abington Township, and Ranson each recently approved a memorandum of agreement to participate in the development of such a regional approach to stormwater management. And two more, Scranton and Old Forge, might be next, said County Regional Planning Manager Jessica Edwards. So we already have a County Regional Planning Manager, but we need to have a study to possibly create a county-wide stormwater management plan. Now, will the Regional Planning Manager be in charge of the stormwater management plan if this comes? It's redundancy. It's more government, bigger government. And I don't care if it's paid for by a state grant, it is our tax dollars. Now, the county aims to apply later this month for the Department of Environmental Protection grant to fund phase one scope of study to start the development of managing stormwater on a countywide basis, she said. That's the regional planning manager, Jessica Edwards. It is signing on that they will take part if we get the grant, Edwards said. We're trying to get one, a memo of agreement from every municipality by June 13th. Really doesn't leave a lot of time here. And we've seen what stormwater management plans have done for other counties close to us, i.e. the rain tax. So Lackawanna County, prepare for that one. May want to get a couple jars of KY ready. How does any municipality in Lackawanna County look to go into cooperation? Let's leave it at that, cooperation with Lackawanna County as an entity after we've seen the past couple of years of Lackawanna County? I'll leave it at the last couple of years. You know, leave aside the 33% tax increase. Leave aside the reassessment, which is unrelated but related. It's still layering on that cake that we've all been forced to eat. But then you go to the last administration that's been pretty much shielded by this administration of millions of dollars unpaid bill, millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars of increased debt service that you or I are paying for, tax dollars, the downgrading of our bonds multiple times. Why would any municipality in their right mind go into agreement with them that you'd have? Listen, I would highly recommend having your solicitor involved to make sure there's some sort of escape clause if I was a municipality. And is there a reason only 9 out of 40 so far have agreed to this? Two more, Scranton and Old Forge. Now, I understand the city of Scranton. I understand the larger municipalities because they're looking to not have simply have their tax base shoulder the burden. If they could spread that around to everyone else, all 40 municipalities, well, that's better, right? It doesn't hit one harder than the other. But if you live in, let's say, the smaller townships in Lackawanna County, should you be shielding the burden for Scranton, for Dunmore, for Dixon City, Carbondale? So I'd proceed with caution if I was a municipality. And again, when they say, you know, we're applying for this grant from the state, again, that grant was paid for by our tax dollars. So just remember, every time they say these things, it's our tax dollars. They're spending our tax dollars on these things. Now, the effort comes under State Act 167, which requires counties to prepare stormwater management plans and municipalities to adopt ordinances to regulate land development in a matter with the county's plan, according to legislation on the matter pending before Scranton City Council. Do we not have the engineers? Do we not have the roads and bridges and works managers that are already capable of handling this? Or can we at least send them for training from the state that's provided by the DEP or the state or the feds free of charge to get them up to speed on what's needed here? Legislators, be it the state or cities or anything, are real big on let's focus on this. Let's institute these policies and procedures and laws and regulations, but not give anybody the skill set to deal with it, because then we have to hire outside contractors. Then we have to hire outside advisors. We have to get everybody else involved. And we've seen how that works. Now, I'm going to talk about another issue with 81 when we talk about lane restrictions later in the show, because 81 has been an utter disaster as far as watching what has taken place over the past 2 or 3 years. And here are the so-called experts, you know, roads engineers, asphalt engineers, and everything else. With this stormwater management plan, though, for people who live in rural Lackawanna County, like a lot of us do, should we get a rebate if we have more green space in our properties? You know, it's not like the city of Scranton, where there's just a lot of concrete. City of Carbondale, where there's a lot of concrete, Dunmore, and you know, a little less with a mix of green space. But places like Greenfield, places like Thornhurst, places like Goldsboro, places like that that have a lot of green space, mostly green space. Should those municipalities get some sort of rebate as far as the stormwater goes? Because we're helping the system, right? Our ground's absorbing that rainwater. It's not, we have nothing but impervious surfaces for the most part. So if I was a municipality, I would tread with caution. And I'm not saying don't get involved with this. But I would have an escape plan or an opt-out clause somewhere in there that anywhere during the process you're not held as part of that, because I think it would be a hard sell to the people of rural Lackawanna County that you are shouldering some of the burden for some of the more urban areas in Lackawanna County. And I think that's what a lot of this is focused on. You know, spread it around to the entire county so it's not a burden on a select few. And even though those select few live in areas that create the most stormwater issues. But it was interesting to see the county turn to municipalities and say, well, yeah, don't look at our track record. Don't look at everything we've messed up for the past couple of years. But trust us on this. Now, trust is earned, and so far you haven't earned a damn thing. The government of Lackawanna County, so I would proceed with caution. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. The text messages are fired up already. Just call it what it is, the pre-rain tax study. Someone else said, so Lackawanna County wants to use tax money for a study to initiate a rain tax for Lackawanna County. He said, I have a stormwater plan. It's called the Lackawanna River. No taxes, no board, no fees, done. Somebody said, I also should pay more because I have more property. Yeah, but that property absorbs the rain. It doesn't shed it, unlike impervious services like concrete and asphalt and such like that, as per their definition. All of a sudden, the rain is an issue. One of the other issues, and we've seen this from former vice president candidate Tim Walz to other shows on TV and on the radio, creating fear about Medicaid, especially here in Pennsylvania. So I did a little dig today, and I posted this on my Facebook page so you could see it there, share it there, discuss it with your friends, read it more in depth. But who specifically in Pennsylvania will lose Medicaid if the big, beautiful bill passes as it is today? The One Big Beautiful Bill passed the U.S. House of Representatives on May 22, 2025. It proposes significant changes to Medicaid that could lead to coverage losses for many Pennsylvanians. While the bill is under consideration in the Senate and subject to potential revisions, here's an available analysis of who might be affected based on the House version of the bill. Now pay attention here. Key groups at risk of losing Medicaid in Pennsylvania. Low-income adults subject to work requirements. The bill introduces community engagement requirements mandating that able-bodied adults aged 19 to 64 without dependents, complete at least 80 hours per month of work, volunteering, or education to maintain Medicaid eligibility starting no later than December 31st, 2026. So if you're an able-bodied adult that can volunteer, work, or go to school between the ages of 19 and 64, if you refuse to work, yes, you may lose Medicaid. Medicaid expansion enrollees, remember under the Affordable Care Act during COVID? The expansion, which covers adults with incomes up to 138% of the federal poverty level. It imposes work requirements, more frequently eligibility checks, every 6 months instead of annually, and a new cost-sharing charge up to $35 per service for those above the poverty line. So if you're above the poverty line, you will have a $35 copay. You will have to prove twice a year instead of annually that you're eligible for Medicaid. Doesn't seem too hard now, does it? Dual Medicare and Medicaid enrollees, dual eligibles. The bill could affect nearly 1.4 million dual eligibles nationwide. That's not just Pennsylvania. Who are enrolled in both Medicare and Medicaid, with Pennsylvania having a significant share due to its large Medicaid population. These individuals, often low income and medically fragile, rely on Medicaid to cover Medicare premiums, cost sharing, and services like long-term care not covered by Medicare. Again, we'll have to pay a $35 copay, like pretty much you and I have to do every time we go to the doctor. What this does, if you have Medicare and Medicaid, basically every time you go to the doctor, it's free. And if you ever take care of an elderly family member, if you have anyone on Medicare or Medicare, they go to the hospital for a lot, they go to the doctors for a lot, and they send them for a lot of tests because they know they're guaranteed payment. And the more tests, the more things they can run on them, the more payment they get. Now, what this will do is say, okay, well, every time you go, you have to pay $35. So maybe I'm not that sick today. Maybe I'll just ride this out. Maybe I don't need that test. Individuals affected by stricter enrollment and verification rules, the bill imposes enhanced verification standards, requiring Medicaid enrollees to verify addresses and provide additional documentation and mandates eligibility redeterminations every 6 months for expansion enrollees. It also suspends the rules designed to streamline enrollment in Medicaid and related programs, saving an estimated $167.3 billion nationally by reducing enrollment. So again, you'll have to prove that you're eligible for Medicaid twice a year rather than just annually. And if you can prove you're eligible for Medicaid in January, it shouldn't be too hard to prove in July. And here's the big one here. Populations impacted by restrictions on state funding mechanisms. The bill prohibits states from creating new provider taxes or expanding existing ones and restricts their use to finance Medicaid, saving an estimate $123.9 billion nationally. It also reduces the federal match rate for states that use their own funds to cover undocumented immigrants, which could affect Pennsylvanians' ability to fund currently covered illegal immigrants. Illegal immigrants will no longer be qualified for Medicaid. Now, the political claims, because that's all this is, Republican lawmakers argue the bill curbs wasteful spending and creates checks and balances for those who deserve the program, while Democrats, like John Fetterman and Josh Shapiro, warn of devastating impacts on vulnerable populations. Now, vulnerable populations, by the definition of the law, are people who are able-bodied to work but don't want to. That's who their vulnerable populations are. People who it's too burdensome to prove twice a year rather than once a year that they're eligible for Medicaid in this benefit. They're too vulnerable. Or illegal immigrants. They're too vulnerable. Or people who get both Medicaid and Medicare, basically having zero cost for their insurance, having to pay a $35 copay for services. That's who they consider vulnerable populations. So the next time someone tells you it's a scare tactic, they're cutting millions of people off Medicaid, those are the people who are at risk under this bill, under this law. They don't tell you that part, though. They don't tell you the millions of people they're talking about are able-bodied adults that don't have dependent children, aren't going to school, illegal immigrants, and those that are capable of paying $35 copayment to limit the amount of use they actually use the system to think before they go. The very same way when you go to the emergency room, a lot of us, they raise that copayment up to $500 because they don't want people using the emergency room. But if you go to an urgent care, it's $50 because they'd rather you go to an urgent care. It's nothing that we're all doing who have health insurance have to deal with. It's fear tactics for politics. That's all it is. It's 3:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Somebody chimed in on the text line and says $35 is way too much to go to the doctor, and what if they just don't go because they can't pay the $35? It'll limit how much you use the services. Yes, it will, and that's by design. But if you are truly sick, if you are truly ill, yes, you'll pay the $35. And you'll pay it in $5 increments if need be. It's funny, the very same people who have issues with $35 copayment are the same people who have a $1,000 iPhone, who have no problem at happy hour at their local pub, and have a carton of cigarettes in their car. A lot of them. Not everybody. But come on now. We've been there. I grew up poor, worked three jobs through college, and there's ways to do it. And able-bodied people who were given a pass a lot during COVID, the expanded COVID definitions for who qualified, and the fact that they refused to kick people off that did no longer qualified. Yeah, there needs to be corrections there. The system, and listen, if you want illegal immigrants on Medicaid, if you want able-bodied Americans on Medicaid, if you want people not to pay $35 for when they go to the hospital or doctor on Medicaid, then what are you willing to do with it? Are you willing to pay 5 or 10% more in your taxes? Are you willing to reduce your Medicaid or Medicare when it's time for you to receive it? Because these programs are insolvent. They will not be here in 12 to 15 years unless we do something to fix them. Same goes for Social Security. So what's your idea for you? What extra are you willing to pay to have these people on? And that's a conversation that we could have. If you want illegal immigrants, let's figure out what each taxpaying American needs to pay extra to have them on. I don't think that'll fly, though. But it's easy to say it on a text line when you know that you will not have to pay extra yourself. So one of the other debacles, and listen, I've reached out to the Secretary of Transportation's office for the U.S., Duffy. I've reached out to Congress. About 81. Now, we're dealing with lane restrictions for paving and guardrail work on 81. And this will be from Scott Township, 199, down to mile marker 205. Now, for the past 3 years, now let's go back to the start. Under the infrastructure, where there were big, beautiful signs saying, thanks to the Biden administration, your roads are being repaved thanks to this administration under the infrastructure. It was paved great. Wonderful paving. Smooth as could be. Line markers were beautiful and clear, fresh. It was a glide home everywhere from Clark Summit all the way to my, past my exit on the way to Binghamton. And then sections have been cut up, dug out, lanes closed, traffic dealt with dozens of times. I mean, we're talking three or four dozen times now. Sections have been cut up, then a skim coat put on, recut up again, another skim coat that wasn't thick enough to even cover to the bottom coat where it started breaking apart. Someone needs to investigate what's screwed up there. How many times do they need to cut up and repave this segment over and over again? Now, listen, our tax dollars paid for this. The Infrastructure Act, yes, our tax dollars paid for it. And if the job was not done correctly, where's the investigation? How come this company is not banned from all work in Pennsylvania or anywhere if they're a national company? It's not PennDOT doing this work. These are contractors. Not a single PennDOT truck has been involved with this. So I'm not pointing a finger at them whatsoever. But I'm sure PennDOT and Department of Transportation has to oversee it. I want someone to do an investigation on what's going on here, because are we paying more for these repairs? Are we paying more for them to dig it up and repave it over and over again? I can't see a company having to eat that. Who looked the other way? What inspector for the state oversaw this that was negligent, where this needed to be dug up dozens of times? Now they've dug it up a bunch of times more, and now they're putting another skim coat over the top. Hopefully this skim coat actually gets to the coat that's there and doesn't have pieces chipping up from it, like going south near the Scott exit before Waverly. It got to the point where I started taking pictures driving both south and north of all the issues that they've had. And every time they cut up a segment, yeah, they pave it nice. They seal the edges. Water's going to get in there. It's going to freeze. It's going to start cracking. It's going to start breaking apart. Anytime it's not a complete service. Now, thankfully, they're putting a skim coat over it. But this is 3 years of dozens of tear-ups in segments. Now, not only are they tearing this up, not only the extra man hours or woman hours or the work to do it, but you're ruining the integrity of the road by having segments and patches. You're closing down lanes, adding to traffic, inconvenience for the public. You know, the very people who paid for this. So who screwed this up? And I want the Federal Department of Transportation to look into this because it was a lot of our trillions of dollars of tax money that went to the infrastructure. You know, you're all going to have new roads and new bridges. Well, we don't have many new bridges now, do we? And we did have a nice road till they start tearing it up because something was screwed up with it. Someone didn't do the right job, and someone who was tasked to oversee it didn't oversee it properly. So now we have lane closures and more paved work to do and more dig-ups to do and lane restrictions, and we have to deal with fallout. This is going on 3 years now. It's outrageous. And someone should look into it, and hopefully Congress does, hopefully the Department of Transportation does, because someone needs to answer for the negligence that's taken place there. There is no reason that a freshly paved road within the last 2 years need to be dug up dozens of times. It's insane. It's 3:43 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. A lot of people feeling me on 81, bringing up some other places. Rob, Meade Street in Wilkes-Barre tore it up with two utility pipe work, repaved a whole street 3 weeks later, came back, tore it up. WTF. People on 81 talking about it, the same thing. I just saw a headline from the Scranton Times Tribune on Facebook. And it's this story of the Scranton man suing DraftKings, that he got hooked and lost everything. Scranton Times, this is what they post. When Lionel Alicia moved to Scranton with his five children last year, he had $100,000 in the bank and hopes for a bright future. A gambling site took it all away, he claims in a lawsuit. A gambling site took it all away? A gambling site took it all away. Now, you didn't waste it? It's a gambling site. There's no personal responsibility anymore. Hey, you moved here with five children with $100,000 in the bank? Sorry, buddy. No one forced you to do anything. I understand gambling is an addiction, but there's also personal responsibility there. There's also personal responsibility, like any other addiction, except your disease, right? Scrolling, you know, that just came across. And of course, you know, it's everyone else's fault but his. Another issue is steel stocks leap after Trump vows to double tariffs to 50%, making Pittsburgh the steel city again. Steel stock jumped yesterday after President Trump vowed to double tariffs on the metal to 50%. Shares of the mining company Cleveland-Cliffs soared 23%, while Steel Dynamics and Nucor both rose 10%. During a Pennsylvania rally on Friday, Trump told steelworkers he would hike the tax on steel imports so Pittsburgh would be respected around the world as the steel city again. At 25%, they can sort of get over the fence. At 50%, they can no longer get over the fence, Trump said. We don't want America's future to be built with shoddy steel from Shanghai. We want to build the strength and pride of Pittsburgh. The steel union has supported Trump on this 100%. Union leadership, we know how they act. EU currency faces 25% tariffs on steel and cars and reciprocal tariffs on most goods, which were previously set at 20% during it. Listen, this is something that's been noticed for a while. I mean, anyone who's in the car business and deals with rotors or brakes or such like that, our rotors do not hold up the way they used to be. You know, I've talked about this before where, you know, one of our old minivans, when we still had the young kids, you know, we were able to get lifetime warranty on our rotors. You can't get that anymore because the steel is shoddy. Anyone who works with steel knows it's different now. We need to start making this back. And this deal, keeping those jobs in Pittsburgh right here in our state, increasing the production right here in America, is a good thing. It's interesting that our governor took the other side of the fence on that. But he's a lot of talk, isn't he? He's been in office since 23. Really hasn't done a whole lot. Just talked a whole lot. Just listen to him. He'll tell you. It's coming up on 3:50 here on WILK. Time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. It is 3:54, 80 degrees outside. You can call or text at 570-883-0098. That text line is fired up today. Yes, it is. Let's go to the phone. We have Joe from Edwardsville on steel tariffs.
Hey,
Joe.
Rob, how you doing, brother? Thank you very much for taking my call. You know, you're in serious danger of working every day this week. That's, ooh, man. You got to be careful.
Believe me, yeah, it crosses my mind each and every day, Joe.
this is something, and this is one of my curses, is that I remember back in, and this was when Trump was running the first time around, and he was talking about, how we import all of our steel and things of this nature. And, you know, at the time, a lot of what we imported was coming from Canada. And everybody, his opponents and the media as well, they shredded him. Like, oh, yeah, he thinks this is a danger because, you know, our greatest ally, Canada, is liable to screw us on steel. And nobody ever stopped to think, you know, okay, yes, Canada is an ally of ours, and, you know, and we import steel from there and what have you. What's going to happen if the world goes to hell in the Middle East or in Russia and Ukraine and a balloon goes up and the war breaks out? What's Canada going to do? Canada's going to sit on its own steel. They're going to worry about their own needs to fuel any kind of a military machine they might have. You would think we would have learned this lesson after the supply chain issues we had during COVID, when, you know, many of the things we need on a day-to-day basis, from medicine to toilet paper, we couldn't get. Because, yes, these countries are friendly with us, and we have trade deals with them. But if I need it, you know, it's just like if you were my neighbor and you came over while I'm mowing my lawn and say, hey, dude, I want to borrow your lawnmower. I'm going to be like, you know, brother, I love you. And, we'll have a beer later and stuff. But in the meanwhile, I'm using it. You know, this is not this. There's nothing nefarious there. It's just reality. And nobody wants to grasp those things. It's really killing me.
No, two things. If that war, which hopefully doesn't break out or never breaks out, but
absolutely. I'm not wishing things. I'm just saying.
No doubt. Is staffing for manpower and our industrial infrastructure. We do not have the same world that we lived in World War II, where we can retool an entire ready industrial complex to fuel a military operation. We don't have that anymore. A lot of it would need to be done from scratch. And it's one of the things that we talked about during, you know, my Navy special. You know, can we retool America to support us in a world war? And at the current time, that answer is no. We've seen it with shipbuilding. We've seen it with aircraft manufacturing. And one of the reasons we won World War II is because we were able to replace and repair ships. We were able to put out aircraft by the dozens per day. We were able to staff with a draft. I mean, like I said from the start, we will need a draft if there's a world war. If there's a large-scale war, not even a world war. If we're in a large-scale war, it'll necessitate a draft.
Yes. And to go, well, that goes without saying, which is going to be funny. It's tragically funny, but funny. But just to step back, because it wasn't just, we weren't just building our own ships and our own planes. There was a land lease program. If it wasn't for us, Russia and the UK, they They were mostly, you know, working off munitions that we built for them. It was our industrial, and don't get me wrong, I'm not selling short our military might that fought in the Second World War, but it was our industrial might that saw through to cleaning that whole mess up. And just, and again, to just skip back one point, I had forgotten about this, but if, heaven forfend, we wind up in a difficult position with some other country, Pakistan, India, China, the H-1B visa program, so many of the people who run our IT infrastructure are people who are here on H-1B visas because we can't get kids out of school who can do the work that they're doing in tech companies. And if something bad happens, it's going to be, they're going to be snapping their suitcases closed and going home. So, whoop. Good luck to you. See you later.
Well, listen to the show because I didn't want to aggravate you before, and I'm up against the 4 o'clock break here. But I have a story on two Chinese nationals that have been just stopped and charged with something devastating to America if it would have went through. So we're going to talk about that after the 4 o'clock hour. Joe, I appreciate your call.
I appreciate you, brother. Can't wait.
Thank you. 4 o'clock.